Easter's over, the war in the Gaza continues and intensifies. St. Peter Youth Ministry Center closes, and there's an eclipse coming. All on today's Next Step, number 789, April 6th, 2024.
Hi, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. Welcome to another episode of The Next Step with Father Vazquez. Here, Father Vazquez provides a distinct and consistent voice for one of the most ancient of all Christian traditions, Armenian Orthodoxy, and applies it to our life today. Armadoxy! It's a way of life! And no, you don't have to check your brain in at the door to follow Armadoxy. It is the means for providing people an intelligent and practical answer to the challenges of life, based on the solid principles of love, faith and hope is expressed by our Lord Jesus Christ. So we invite you to turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
Well, welcome wherever you are in the world. Glad to have you with me right now. We are right in the aftermath of Easter. We're going to be talking about Easter, what happened. We're going to also talk about a big event taking place this coming Monday, the solar eclipse. And I say this because, you know, Easter, the date of Easter, is based on the full moon. It's the first Sunday after the full moon of spring. Yeah, there it is. And not only did we see that full moon come up a couple weeks ago, but it's now going to eclipse because it'll be the new moon after 2 weeks, right? So that new moon is basically, they say new moon, it just means that it's out while the sun is out, so you can't see it. Unless it passes between us, the Earth, and the sun, in which case it's going to do that on April 8th. And not only is the predictability remarkable that, you know, these things are on timetables, on just God's timetable, as Scripture tells us. I mean, really think about it. It's not only on a timetable, but the distance between us and the sun is exactly that right amount so that the moon does block out the entire sun when you're in the path of totality. In other words, if we were just a little bit farther away from the sun or a little bit closer, that totality would be different. It would be a different event. Anyway, I'm getting ready to go to it. I was at the last one. I think it was 2017 it was, in Portland, Oregon. God willing, this Monday we'll be out in Texas to see it in a town called Uvalde. Looking forward to it. I think it's just beautiful today. I had my hair cut, and my the lady who was cutting the hair said, so what's going on? And I said, oh, I'm going off to Texas for the eclipse. And she says, oh, is that in the Bible? And I go, whoa. I go, I'm not sure if that's in the Bible. I mean, what do you mean by that? Well, she says, well, is it something that's predictable in the Bible? I said, well, you know, when the Bible was written, there was many, many different ways of explaining these things. Now, science tells us in very practical terms that the moon comes right over the sun. Do you want to read more into that? But, you know, it signals something that's going on in the world right now, and this scripture consciousness. There's an excellent, excellent podcast that I follow regularly. It's called Inside the Vatican. And this week, they were talking about how seminarians are now becoming more conservative, more authoritarian, let's say it that way, more authoritarian, that they seem to know more than the parishioners, more than people. And you know what? It's interesting. I'm finding that the same is true in the Armenian Church with a younger generation of deacons that are not necessarily going to become the priests, but have this insight, so to speak, about God because they are able to go and function, be a functionary during the services. It's an interesting phenomena, not one that I want to get into right now, but it was interesting that this lady just asked me, well, is the eclipse in the Bible? Like, okay, and if it isn't? And if it is, what, I'm not following. Well, of course I'm following, but you got to make it look like you're not following because you know, you want them to talk. You want them to be able to explain or express what they're thinking. I understand. If it's in the Bible and it's predicted and it has to something to do with the end of the ages. I saw this guy named Morris Cirillo a couple days ago, another bout with insomnia, middle of the night. He's out there and he's talking about how the earthquakes, a horrible one just took place in Taiwan a day or so ago. He was talking about other earthquakes and famines that are taking place. And, you know, and he's saying these are all predicted in the Bible. Well, there's been earthquakes since the beginning of time. There's been famines. People haven't eaten. And just, I mean, you know, you got to understand that when the scriptures were written, it was a way of expressing to people some things that were going on in lifetime and expressing or transferring a bit of hope to the hopeless. And that's what I want to talk about today, because events that are happening right now, you know, when we talk about famine, yeah, it could be caused because of the drought conditions. And we used to look up to heaven and say, why isn't it raining? And there are many traditions where, you know, you pray for the rain and so on, because obviously if there is drought conditions, it's something that you don't have control over, or maybe you do. I know here in the Los Angeles basin, we're always in a state of drought. And, you know, when you think about over the last 2 years, the amount of rainfall that we've had here in Los Angeles, you say, well, how could there be drought? How could there possibly be drought when so much rain is falling? Well, it could be because we're not collecting that rain. We're not set up. We're not setting up our systems. And then later on, when you're sitting there without water, you're saying, well, you know, it didn't rain and everything. No, it's not. We're not collecting what is being given to us. So much of the rain, and you could, anyway, it's a local phenomena for me in Los Angeles. I know many of you are so far away, and many of you are probably regretting the rain. I know how much rain is falling everywhere else. But what I'm getting at is that you can't just blame the heavens for everything that's happening. We have to take some of the blame, and certainly that's what's going on right now in Gaza, where there's famine, where there's hurt. This morning, the pictures that were coming out of Gaza, and, you know, seven workers were killed, relief workers, people who were taking food over there. And I heard one of I believe it was the father of one of the relief workers, express something very, very important. He says, this is no longer a war against Hamas. It is a war against humanity. And today, I happened to be hearing, it was on the radio, this guy Prager, who's like a Pharisaic Jew, you know. And he's talking about, well, how dare they talk about that? How dare they talk about against humanity? Look what Hamas did to us. Yes, that's exactly the point that Jesus was making, that an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth is the old system. It doesn't work today. You can't do it, because an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth is going to leave people blind and toothless. And that's what's happening. They went out on this big campaign against Hamas, and all it's going to do is for the next 5-6 generations, if nothing else happens, that at least the next 5 generations are going to be working against Israel and working against peace. Well, yeah, there's retaliation that they're going to be getting. I mean, that's what evil does. Evil begets evil. It's like saying A plus A equals 2A. We know that that's true, right? If you have something, a constant, and you add it to itself, A plus A, you're going to get 2A, right? But what we want to say in this strategy is that if we have war and we have evil, or we have killing, I can then put another set of killing and I will get what? Zero? I will get peace? No. A plus A will equal 2A. It's going to be that evil times 2. It's not going to be zero. It can't be. It's against the laws of mathematics. It's against the laws of reason. And so when you look at what's going on in the world, where is the hope? Okay, we just went through this beautiful week called Easter, called Resurrection. And you have to wonder, where is that hope of resurrection in our lives today? I mean, we're so fast to say, Happy Easter, Christ is risen, the resurrection, blessed be the resurrection of Christ. Okay, these are nice little sayings, but in reality, we're just out there killing people. And in that same dialogue and conversation about this is a war against humanity, there's people that are talking, you know, that it's against humanity because we are killing children, we are killing women. And why is it that it's okay to kill soldiers? Why is it okay to kill people? Somehow women and children are exempt, and it's not because I'm jealous, you know. Yeah, maybe I am. I don't know. I wish there would be something that would say all war is evil. All killing is evil. We've got to get with the program that this is not going to help us. This is not going to help us within our world. To advance the cause of peace, you can't use more evil and more force. At some point, somebody's got to be the peacemaker. That's why Jesus says, blessed are the peacemakers. They will be called sons of God. You think about who was the son of God in history. Okay, I'm not talking about your worship schedule, but who is identified as the Son of God? Jesus. And when he came, what was the message? Peace on earth, goodwill towards men. Why is that so hard? Well, it's hard because we have all of our own agendas. Every one of us has agendas. And on a greater scale, you know, there's countries, there's people who have agendas, who have their operations. Now, this guy Prager, he gets up and he says, well, how come nobody's complaining about what's going on in Ethiopia? In the last 2 years, there's been 500,000 Ethiopians that have been killed, 100,000 Ethiopian women that have been raped. And he says, well, no one's picking on them. Well, of course they're picking on them. Of course, we've been talking about it, but we're such a small minority because the world is focused in on this. Yes, it is true. It is a pick and choose kind of thing. It is a cafeteria style, right? It's what the media gives you, and this is what they're telling you. But this is a time where we have the resources to go beyond the typical media. In my generation, we were here in America, we were accustomed to three sources of media. One was called ABC, American Broadcasting Company, NBC, National Broadcasting Company, and CBS. That was called the Colombian Broadcasting System. Okay? These were the main sources of news that would come via television. Before that, there was radio. Simultaneously with that, there was newspaper, and there were some big ones. You know, their big operators, of course, was the New York Times with the Chicago Tribune, LA Times, and each of the big cities had their newspapers, which would come out and share the news with people. Now, today, just everybody and their grandmother can broadcast news. Anybody can now share their beliefs, as is evident by this podcast. 16 years ago, I figured it out. Okay, my voice, I want people to hear my voice. What's nice about, in my case, yes, it's different. You have the option to turn it off. You don't want to hear me, you just turn it off, or you don't open me up. In the olden times, you didn't have that option because you had three choices. Well, you had four choices. And then we started getting a little bit more fancy. We'd get the BBC. And then we'd listen in on radio. And we'd get this and that until the internet really kind of exploded everything. And now you have an option to get this or that. Now, with that comes a very big danger, in that we don't have anybody who has edited. Everyone's saying that, okay, I'm free to get whatever information I want. Yes, absolutely. But now we're finding the value of the editor. The editor is very important. It's important. And before you turn me off, listen to this. It's important because they have sifted through and said, this is the information that's going to come out. Now, that's why there's editorial policies. And that's why there's leanings, okay? If you have a more conservative leaning, if you have a more liberal leaning, that will decide what stories are going to get out. And so it's important to know the leaning of that editor, where that paper is coming from, where that news source is from. But now to the mix, we add, well, artificial intelligence. We add the ability of bots, of robots, spreading news, spreading disinformation, artificial intelligence, putting words in the mouths of people. So today you can have an image of somebody saying what you want, and that person or that image and that sentence has never existed. And these are real, real, real situations that we are approaching today. So we look at the world and we see it. I, for one, am just I'm beyond myself. I don't know what to do, how we got from the point of saying Christ has risen to a point where there's just general apathy. To me, an Armenian who talks about April 24th, the genocide, and is apathetic to what's going on in Gaza is worthless. Who cares about something that happened 100 years ago if you're not caring about what's going on today? Just as a Jew who would get up and say that, well, it's, you know, genocide is okay in this case because, well, look, there's more people dying in Ethiopia than there are in Gaza. Well, that's not the point. The point is there a moral wrong to this? And the answer is not to point to history and say, well, they did it to us first. That's childish. I mean, every one of you know that that's childish, right? If you've raised children, if you've been a child, right? You do that. Hey, stop doing that. Well, he did it to me first. Hey, stop hitting your sister. Well, she hit me first. Stop pulling on his arm. Well, he did this to me first. You know, it's like childish. And that's what the argument is. That's the only argument that you can hear coming out of Israel. And somebody needs to call it out. Now, Martin Luther King Jr., in his letter from Birmingham jail, makes a very, very important case about if we are Christian and we really believe in what Christ said, that at some point there is a moral imperative for us to stand up for the weak. There is a moral imperative for us to mimic Christ. And the question is, what would Christ do? So I was thinking about that this morning as I was listening to this Prager guy. How would Christ answer these hideous claims that he's making? You know, that it's okay because they did it first. What would Christ answer? The sad part for me, as I was saying earlier, is even bigger because we're seeing now this infiltrating inside of, yes, seminaries. We have a local Armenian church here who has teachers who teach Sunday school with this kind of ideology. We have seminarians that have this kind of ideology. And nobody is engaged in this conversation to say that, okay, I have the ideology, but can I defend myself against the gospel? Can I do that? And I'm not talking about Old Testament. I'm talking about the gospel of Jesus Christ. The Jesus Christ gospel is something completely different. If you want to know what it's about, I suggest that you follow along in many of our teachings that we have on epostle.net. In particular, we did an Advent series on the teachings of Jesus Christ as expressed in the Sermon on the Mount. In particular, you can follow the Lenten series that we did. I mean, everything we're talking about revolves around the core person of Jesus Christ. We've got to get out of that mentality, if we are Christian, that we have to buy into the whole Jewish story. No, you don't. That was one of the early Christian difficulties that they had. Well, if to be a Christian, do you need to get circumcised, for instance, the man. Does a man have to be circumcised? Well, Jews have circumcision in there. And there was a group of people that were saying, okay, to be a Christian, you first had to be a Jew and then accept Christ. And we see that even in early times, no, that wasn't the case. Today, even so, we're seeing as proof, as evidence, that there was a concerted effort for them to usurp who Jesus was by proclaiming that he was a continuation of the Judaic tradition. When in fact, when you look at it, and if what we believe is true, that he is the Son of God and that God is beyond ethnicity, you realize that, oh, wait a minute. Did you know that in the first century, talking about 2,000 years ago, Judaic tradition changed where the individual is identified not by the father, but by the mother. Yeah, it's interesting. In all of the Middle East, there's nobody else who identifies because of the mother. But for some reason, the Jew, you are Jewish if your mother's Jewish. Did you know that? Yeah, that's true. You go ask anybody today, are you a Jew? Well, if their mother is a Jew, they're a Jew. Well, it's kind of convenient, isn't it, that the first century, that they changed this rule in the first century. Why? Because if Jesus is the son of Mary, then he's a Jew. But if he's the son of the father, whoa, then he's beyond ethnicity. He's beyond the Jewish ethnic makeup. He belongs to everyone. He belongs to humanity. He belongs to the world. And that's why I feel very comfortable saying this. You go into any church today and the imagery, the iconography will resemble that group of people. That's why if you go into a Black Baptist church, you see Jesus, dark-skinned. You go into an Armenian church, you see those big eyes, the big nose. When you go into an Asian church, you see the slanting of the eyes, and so on and so on. Yes, because we all perceive Jesus as he is to us, the Son of God. I think I've been going for a while. Let me take a break right now. I want to continue. Bear with me. I play a song every week. I'm going to do that right now. Just a little bit of time to digest what's been said. I'll be back with some more in just a few moments and tell you about something interesting that happened along the way. Here's today's pick.
Unpresent platform, do your soft shoe shovel dance. Brush away the cigarette ash that's falling down your pants. And then you sadly wonder, does the nurse treat your old man the way she should? She made you tea, ask for your autograph. What a laugh.
That's a beautiful song from 1971, Ian Anderson singing that of Jethro Tull, doing Cheap Day Return, referring to a ticket. You know how you have the Cheap Day Return ticket? He's on a platform visiting his dad, who was in the hospital. Just the kind of thoughts that you would have in such a situation. I know, I wish I could have told you that at the beginning. Well, what you can do is you could just rewind it a couple steps. It's only a 1 minute song. And you'll hear it. Do you like that? Yeah, it's a very short one, but beautiful. From the same album, Aqualung, there was another little short gem. It's called Slipstream. Let me play that and then we'll get on with our show.
Well, the lush separation enfolds you, and the products of wealth push you along on the far wave of their spiritless undying selves. And you press on God's way to your last dime as he hands you the bill. And you're spinning in the slipstream, tied to some reasoning, paddle right out of the maze. And you paddle right out of the maze.
Yes, Slipstream. Very, very powerful songs. 1971. Jethro Tull from the Aqualung album. Well, welcome back to the second portion. I'm going to be sharing with you some personal stories that happened over this Easter break, and I hope that you'll appreciate what's been going on. For one, Easter was very special for me. I had a chance to celebrate the Divine Liturgy on Easter Eve at St. Peter Armenian Church Youth Ministry Center, which we began in 2003. And sadly, on Easter Sunday, the last liturgy was celebrated there. So, and I'll tell you a little bit about that in a minute. But what we did during Easter week is we shot that church in 360 technology via epostle.net. So we now have footage of that church in 360, and I do a guided tour. It's actually available right now, but we're going to actually premiere it soon. But if you do your searching, you can find it. I still, believe it or not, I haven't seen the full thing yet, but I know it's out there. Now, on Holy Week, I split my time between St. Gregory and Pasadena, where it was beautiful. I got to see my grandson get his feet washed. And I got a beautiful sermon out of it from Father Yeremia, a wonderful young priest, Vartabet from Armenia, Echmiadzin, who's now been assigned to the Western Diocese. Just kind of a true blessing. And one of the things that he said in his sermon, which really just resonated with me, and I know you'll agree, those of you who have been listening, you'll know why. He talked about during his seminary years how one of the teachers had challenged his seminary class with the problem, I have five apples, how can you divide it so that it could be equally, six people can equally have one apple? In other words, how can you make five apples into six apples? And he said, we went through this in the seminary in very philosophical terms, like maybe we're perceiving this, maybe there's a cut and in between, and then this, it's like that. He says, we approached it very philosophically until one day we took a field trip. And he said, it was out to a village, and when the bus stopped, there were farmers, there were locals who were selling their vegetables and produce. And he said, I saw one older man who was selling apples. And I went up to him and he said, Heidi, Father, he says, tell me something. How can I take five apples and make them six? How can I produce six apples out of these five? Thinking that maybe he'd have the answer since he works with all of these vegetables and these fruits. And he just looked at him. He said, my son, he says, that's impossible. Anhanarine. It's not possible. And he said, that was really the answer. He says, we forget. We forget that that is also an answer, that it is not possible. And that's the realm of God. We always try to figure it out with our heads, right? But in God's eye, God's mind, these things are possible for him, but you don't need to get involved. Now, the apple is just an example. Think about it in terms of the eclipse. 3,000 years ago, if you looked up at the sun and you said, there's going to be something that's going to block it, and all of a sudden, just out of nowhere, you see a disc coming in front of it and blocking it out. What would you think? Well, there's going to be people who are going to say that the gods must have sent it. There's going to be people who are going to say that, you know, this was a sign, an omen. But 3,000 years later, when they figure out that, you know, there's astronomical boundaries, one of which is the moon that circles the earth, and it has a path, and it comes in between the sun and us, it blocks out the sun. So what we have done is not debunked a myth. What we've done is we've just explained a reality. But the myth is okay. It served its purpose. And it's okay to say that the myth is no longer necessary. I hope this makes sense. I'm not trying to overthrow anybody's belief system. But you understand at some point you say that was a myth and now I understand it. In the case of making 5 into 6, I don't know how to do it. You can't make 5 apples into 6 apples, okay? So it's okay to say it's impossible. In 3,000 years, if there's a way of doing it, yeah, they're going to look back at us and they're going to say, those people, they thought it was impossible. So they created this story about how they got off a bus and okay, that's fine. But for us, that works right now. And I'm comfortable with that. I'm comfortable to say, no, it's impossible. If you remember the book 1984, you know, he holds up 4 fingers and he says, how many fingers am I holding up? And he says, you got 4. But they press the issue, like, what is reality? What is the reality that you're going to see? And then finally being pressed under duress, he finally sees the 5 fingers that are up there. And it's something you got to read. I just digress, like I always do, because I just remembered that, what is that reality? But in any case, for us in the Armenian Church, and I love the system, we base it on mystery. Mystery deep, inscrutable. And that's the realm of God. And that's why we don't get into this whole predicting, you know, the end of the world and everything. Jesus told us, he says, it's none of your business. Worry about today. But there are people who will insist, we have to know, we have to know. And what I'm telling you is when you start doing that, you're really going against what the gospel teaching is. And that's only one case. There's so much that we have to understand. And so, there I was during Holy Week, on Holy Saturday, and I was asked to go and give communion Saturday morning. Now, very practical terms, we have thousands upon thousands of people that come to the St. Leon Cathedral in Burbank. It's the center of our diocese. Thousands of people visit it during Holy Week. And the priest there, Father Khajak, just said that we need to minimize the incidence of overcrowding. And so he started administering communion on Saturday from pre-consecrated communion from Holy Thursday. And so Saturday morning he asked a few of us priests to go and serve communion. And I went for 2 shifts. And, you know, there's hundreds of people. And I was standing there giving communion, and one lady came up, just kind of made my whole day. She just said, you know, I've been following the Lenten journey. I've been listening every day. And now I'm taking communion. And I realized, you know, it's those small little things that kind of give me hope that, you know, we can teach. We can get a group of people who will understand the seriousness of faith, the importance of faith in our lives. So no sooner had she said this, I gave communion. I was very, very happy. But I needed to get some work done. So Susanna, who produces the basement tapes, happened to be there and wanted to talk and consult. And there were just so many people, we couldn't find any place to talk. We said, let's go to the Starbucks down the street. Now listen to this. This is pretty wild. A few days earlier, I got a call from the secretary at the church, said, would you do a baptism on May 11th? And I said, well, you know, it's kind of rough because I know the schedule that I'm running right now. It's just, I can't put one more thing on the plate. And it's not that I refuse the baptism, because I know that there's other priests at the cathedral who can do it. You know, the cathedral's not a church. It's a cathedral for the diocese, and they have several priests. And so it's not like I'm refusing a baptism. I'm refusing that I can't do it because of my timing. But because May 11th was my son's birthday, I said, you know, that's a good little sign. Let me do it. So I agreed to do it without knowing who they were. So enter Susanna. She says, we need to talk. We have to, so much to do, because we were basically going on just 2 days during the entire Easter week, trying to organize all of the programming that we're doing on Epostle. So we went over to the local Starbucks, and there we were getting into Starbucks, and we're in line, and some man just turns to me and goes, God bless him. He says, did I say that right? I say, yeah, you did perfectly. He says, I've been watching your videos all this time, and I love that one. He says, I saw you. And he says, and I'm so glad that you agreed to baptize my kids. So I turn to him. I go, wait, are you the May 11th baptism? He goes, yes. Now, what are the chances? We weren't supposed to go to Starbucks. We were supposed to have a meeting. We ended up over there. It doesn't end over there. He was so delighted that we got to meet each other. He told me that he was sending his wife and kids into Starbucks to pick up their order when he realized that he had to get out of the car before it locked, something about the key or something like that. So he says, I jumped out of the car, closed it, and I came into line. I wasn't supposed to be here. I wasn't supposed to be there. He wasn't supposed to be there. And yet we're both there, and we're now talking and engaging in a conversation and making me realize how important this ministry is, because we are able to touch places where you otherwise aren't able to touch. You're able to give a message of hope, yes, but also of practical information, practical in the sense that you realize that this is not about just, you know, a cover up in the sky, but this is about real issues in real life. And so when I bring up the issue of what's going on in Gaza, yes, it does bother me. We're saying Christ is risen, but nobody is talking about how does that affect the general feeling in this world right now, where there is hopelessness, where there is death, where there is famine. And can we go beyond that? And so these couple incidents just really helped me a lot. That night, I had to celebrate the Divine Liturgy. As you know, 2003, we started the Youth Ministry Center. I've spoken a lot about it. There's an entire series that I've done. It's called It Was 20 Years Ago Today. Last year when we did that series, you can listen to many of the stories. Those of you who've been with me for many years know that this entire ministry began at that church. And it was there where myself, Susie, we got together and put together the first Next Step. And with a lot of difficulties for several years, we used to publish the Next Step, believe it or not, on CD. You may not know what that is. CDs. We used to, every single week, we had a wonderful lady who would sit in the office and duplicate them on a duplicator. A young man donated a duplicator to our ministry, and we would just actually burn CDs of the Next Step and then distribute them out on the streets, in the neighborhood, in the church, even by mail. Yeah, see, we even used to do it by mail. But that was what was happening out of that little church. And this ministry, this electronic ministry, really found its birth over there, even though it was around a little bit earlier than that, but really got up and going from that church. And so in 2003, that church was given to us for youth ministry, and now the owner of that church said it's time. It's time that he wanted to make some money on it. He needed some money. I don't know what the story is. None of my business. It was just that it's finished. Now, when we originally got it, he promised me and the archbishop at that time that after 15 years, he was going to turn over the deed to us. Of course, you know, it's a gift. You can't demand things like that. It was something he promised, and he was unable to honor that promise. But in any case, we're very thankful that he, you know, allowed us to be there for 20 years, and we had a ministry there, a very fruitful ministry. And I had to celebrate the liturgy there. I haven't been there for 6 years, so I came back, and, you know, one of the messages that I wanted to give, and this was what I mean about giving that hope. How do you give that hope of Christ is risen? I thought to myself, I'm talking on Saturday night. Can you imagine what that original Saturday was like after the crucifixion? Here's a group of people who saw their leader, a man of love and peace, who was nailed to a cross, abused, neglected by his friends, completely left out to dry. And he was put on a cross. Those same hands which had created those people were now being nailed to a cross. And this was what he was getting in return for spreading love. And he was beaten. He was beaten till the life came out of him. And he's on that cross and he says, Father, forgive them. And he finally gives his life on that cross. He dies of asphyxiation. He's completely drained. He can't breathe anymore. Yeah, that's what crucifixion does. It's not, you don't just die because you're bleeding, but yeah, that too. But, you know, it's a torturous, painful, agonizing way to go. And the Jewish community of the time wanted this. They pushed it. They said, the blood, let it be on us. We don't want him around. So imagine if you were there on that Friday and you saw this, your leader, the person you cared for, you loved, that you were with, you saw that and what happened. Now the next day, the Saturday, what condition would you be in? It would be kind of like that twilight or that surrealistic period, wouldn't it be? You know, if you've ever had a death in your family, I remember when my dad died, it was like right afterwards. It was like, is it really real? It's not denial. I don't want to say it's denial. We know it's real. But it's just odd. It's odd. You know, he was so real a day ago. Now today he's not. He's not with us. And you start recounting the things that he's saying. And you start recounting the words that he says up on the cross. The words that he said at his final moments. And each of these play into what you have. And that's what the community in Glendale was going through. Because they had loved this church for 21 years. And now they were told that that's it. There's no more. It's not going to happen. So anybody on that Holy Saturday would have never, never expected that there would be a resurrection. But that resurrection comes about and it changes what we call a bad, evil, horrible Friday into, what do we call it now? A good Friday. It's only good because of the resurrection. And so here's a message to that group of people. We're sitting there in Glendale and things and saying, woe is us. Look how bad it is. They're taking away our church. This is leaving us. Yeah, you can look at it that way. Or you can say, look at the resurrection. Nobody would have thought this is where we are, but look where we are right now. We have a resurrected Lord. We have a resurrected people. And I likened it to what happened 100 years ago, right? They said there would only be one Armenian left and the Armenian would be in a museum. In other words, we who had gathered and assembled inside that church overflowing in 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000, no, actually it's more like 20,000 people that came into the diocese over that week, right? These people weren't supposed to be there, but they're there. And that is the sign of resurrection. So believe that something good is going to happen out of this. That's how simple the message is. But are we giving that message of hope, and turning the attention over to Jesus, who is the only person who can change the horrible, awful, disgusting Friday into a good Friday? It's the same Jesus that could change the words of condemnation when the serpent said, "Take and eat, and you will be like God," and they were condemned. Jesus took those same words, "take and eat," and he made them into the words of salvation. "This is my body, this is my blood." So I had a chance to be at the Youth Ministry Center on the last day, and we celebrated the Divine Liturgy, and I was very blessed to be there from the beginning to the end. On that first Sunday back in 2003, it was a Palm Sunday. And here was Easter Sunday when we did our last service. There were people very somber and sad. But there was also many people who found the hope in the resurrection. And as a priest, to me, that's all you can do. So I wanted to share these stories with you. I'm on my way now to go to see an eclipse. And I believe in that eclipse as being something wonderful. Not mysterious anymore, but something wonderful of how beautiful life is, how God has set this entire universe in motion so that these things do happen, these phenomena do happen. And you can sit on planet Earth and you could see the moon overtake that huge sun. Only because of the proportionality in our distance. And by the way, they're saying because we are an expanding universe, the moon is getting farther and farther away from us, that there's going to come a time when it won't cover up the entire sun. But you don't have to worry about that. That's like in a few million years or something. I don't know. It's some astronomical time period. And during that time, you never know if another moon will come and take its place. A lot of things can happen, right? Yes. But for us right today, it's enough to say thank God that we have a universe like this. And let's thank God for the resurrection, which can give us hope in the most hopeless of times. Okay, here's the pianist telling us it's time to end it. And here's Susie.
Before getting back to the Next Step with Father Vazgen, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this ministry is supported through the heartfelt donations of listeners like you. Thanks for keeping us in your prayers and partnering with this expanding and dynamic outreach. The next step is entering homes and communities with a solid message proclaiming God's message of love, forgiveness, and compassion. We look forward to your comments and words of encouragement. Please consider partnering in this dynamic ministry by making a contribution. By pressing on the donate button on our website, you can set up automatic donations, either weekly, monthly, or annually. Your donation goes a long way in furthering this ministry. Even more, tell your friends and family by sharing the Next Step link or website with them. We're on iTunes and Blueberry, as well as Facebook and Twitter. We are excited about this ministry and invite you to share in our enthusiasm. This is Susie wishing you all of God's blessings in your life. We now return to the Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Thank you, Susie, for that announcement, and thank you all of you for following us, listening to us. Remember the mothership, epostle.net, that's apostle spelled with an E, Apostolic Evangelism for an Electronic and Expanding Universe. Join us there. You'll get daily podcasts with daily messages. You'll get basement tapes with Susanna Bogosian. You get Sunday, Some of Sunday, with Emin Matevosyan. Wonderful shows that you could follow, that you could, they just help you enhance your spirituality. And then look forward to 4/24/24, when we're going to be opening up some sites on the metaverse. You can look around epostle.net. You'll find all kinds of stuff over there. Okay, we'll have some notes in today's show notes. I hope you'll avail yourself to those. On behalf of this wonderful crew who put today's show together, Susie, my producer, and myself, Father Vasco, I look forward to seeing you again next week when we will take the next step, eclipsed or not.
Stand by for disclaimer.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Epostle.net. Apostolic evangelism for an electronic and expanding universe.
I forgot to ask you if you're seeing the same sky as we are. Bye.